bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Hello. It's the Photo Show. Yes, we're here, back with our panel. It's me and Mr. Fox normally, but Mr. Fox has got something to do this week. He's been married, 15 years, him and Mrs. Fox, and they're having a good time away together and celebrating. So, despite the fact he's got absent for the last few weeks, and he's here for the doubleheader, we've got Mr. Forsman joining us. How you doing, buddy?
Pretty good this week, pretty good.
Long time no see.
It's been 2 weeks, hasn't it?
Yeah, no. One of them was my fault, but how's things?
One of them was ours' fault, so... things are going good. Things are going good. I'm really, really excited.
Yeah, you sound it.
Yeah, I have things that I want to say, but I just have to keep them to myself for now.
Oh? But is that other thing that I know about?
Yes.
Ah,
that's
right,
the thing.
Right.
So, I should say I'm very excited about it, and I'm chomping at the bit to be able to share the news, and so hopefully soon here I will be, and then I can just stop being coy about it. How's that?
Okie doke. Right. before he gives any more away, because if you haven't already worked out what it is, you should have done from his little speech there. Mr. Newsom, how you doing,
bud? Yes, sir. I'm doing great. Been a great week for me, so I'm very...
Oh, now then, why has it been a great week for you, mate? Me and Chris didn't...
Christmas came early for me.
Oh, come on then. Right, so story one, review of the D600, I take it. Hold it up. Come on, buddy, hold it up. Let's see it.
There we go. 600.
Oh. It's a good job I'm sitting down.
85.1.8 is new. I also bought a flash, an SB700. Did not for the 910, but this went in, just went for something small for it, lightweight. The battery grip is on back order. Extra batteries as well are back ordered. You can't just buy a separate battery right now, or you can, but it's going to be a week or two, they said, before we'll get those. Got the SD cards, picked up four 16 gig cards.
Now, does the 600 take the XMC card?
They take SD over the compact flash. I was a little concerned about that in the beginning, but everything I've read, it doesn't seem to be an issue with anybody. It works fine in my card reader. It downloads fine. Biggest disappointment right off the bat, I was told all of the reviews I read on the D600, nothing said anything about, you won't be able to use Lightroom or Photoshop to download your RAW files. You have to use the Nikon software, which I never used.
No.
They weren't supported. Apparently, Adobe and Nikon and Adobe and Canon, they don't share enough information ahead of time. And what Adobe has to do is reverse engineer the software to build in the updates that allow for reading those files. So there were changes to the files. So I had to upgrade to from CS5 to CS6. I went from Lightroom 3.6 to Lightroom 4. Mm-hmm. Nothing would open my RAW files, and I don't like shooting anything but RAW.
So you've had to spend about $8,000 then to buy a $2,000 camera.
I was flabbergasted. And
here's some good news. There's some good news. Lightroom 4.2 came out yesterday, I think.
Yesterday. Yeah. And so yesterday morning, I updated it and finally was able to open the files. It was actually day before was able to open the files. And I'm very impressed. I'm very pleased. I've just taken a handful of test shots. I've spent more time reading the manual, which I know you guys use as a doorstop. I actually read the thing. But... It's a fascinating camera. It does a lot of things I didn't know it did. I mean, you know, you read review after review after review, but you can't begin to get into the depth of what this camera can do until you read the manual, and it's pretty amazing. So I'm real pleased. I can't believe they're calling it a consumer grade camera. It's far too technology advanced. technologically advanced for 99.9% of the amateurs that are out there. This is an excellent camera.
Right. Excellent. Have you had a play with one, Chris, or have you been down to a computer shop or a camera shop rather and had a go?
I haven't. Although honestly, I need a new SLR here really soon, by April. And, I'm really looking hard at the D600 and the 6D are kind of what I've been looking at as far as feature wise, price range, everything. So I'm listening with abated attention here.
Yeah, so you're not really tied into one or the other brand, are you? I mean, I know you've got a 20D, but
well, we've got all Canon here in the house, so it's definitely going to be interesting if I decide to switch to Nikon. This is my girlfriend's camera. It's just a Rebel XTI, so it's got some age on it too, but it still works better than my 20D at this point. It's just my 20D is just tired, I think.
Well, you say
it's just had enough.
You say that, but I mean, Carrie Holtzman was on the Big Show last night, and Ellis wants to get into photography. I've got a little 450D here that if Ellis wants to, he can have a go with it. And Carrie the other day said, "Well, I've got a perfect camera for Ellis. It doesn't matter if he batters it or something. You know, I've got a original Rebel, the 300. What would be the 300D here in the UK?" That was a 6-megapixel camera. It was the original DSLR that I had and used commercially when it was first out. It cost me It cost me a good price. I can't remember exactly. It was a pricey sum, £1,500 something.
I sold my. I had a Pentax Autofocus 645N, the film version.
Yep.
Back then, and I sold that and got a digital Rebel.
Right. So I mean, it's a good. And he said to me, you know, but is that not good enough? I'm like, hell, I'd use that. I would use that commercially. I shot commercially with it for 2 years, 2.5 years. It is perfectly good as a camera, and the sensor quality was as good as any of the Canon sensors that have been out since. It's not as big, but the quality was good. Big
was it pixels. 6 megapixels?
It was 6 megapixels, but it was a big sensor.
Right.
That was the difference. It wasn't a little tiny thing with lots of little tiny holes in because of the sensor technology hadn't done it. The quality of the images that came over was superb.
I still have images that I shot with it that are as good or better than some of the ones I've got from my 20D, to be quite frank.
Yeah. I mean, I think you've got to be, if you really, this is the key part, is if you are in the market for a new camera and you know, well, look, what I want to do is take pictures of the family. I'm going to blow them up to A4, A3 maybe, or I might get a bigger canvas if I like it. A 300D is going to cost you about £75 on eBay.
Yeah.
And it'll do the job just fine.
Sure.
Just fine.
So. I talked about this previously, but I've got a 16 by 20 canvas over on the mantle here that I shot with my iPhone 4, which is 5 megapixel.
Yeah.
And it's just straight out of the, I mean, I didn't Photoshop it or anything. I just uploaded it from my phone to this service and had a 16 by 20 canvas made, and it looks great. So yeah, you know, I agree with you. There's if you've got a good camera and a good lens, you know, that can make great images that will hold up even to some enlargement that you might normally expect you'd need a lot of megapixels for.
Bookery in the chat room says, still shooting with my Nikon D100, which was a 6-megapixel camera, and it cost me nearly $2,000 on eBay. And hello, Mac Jim. Thank you very much for the show notes again this week. You're a very, very kind man. Do appreciate your time and effort giving us the stories. So D600, thumbs up, thumbs down, Kev?
So far, thumbs up. I haven't used it. I've only shot maybe 3 images for a client so far. And that was just a test at the end of a session. But yeah, I'm anxious to get it out at event photography. In fact, I've got an event. A potential event. I haven't got the final word yet, but Chris, I may be in your neighborhood first week or last week of October for a couple of days to do a corporate event. So, and that's where I'm anxious to get this thing in use is doing a lot of available light event work where you can be a fly on the wall during meetings and things like that. I'll be in Chicago. Hopefully, I'll let you know. I'll give you a holler.
Sure, cool.
Beers will be had. Can you? I don't think you're going to drink as fast as Forsman, though, mate. He gets pretty roasted.
can be a challenge.
Right. Now, we talked there briefly about Lightroom 4 is coming out, and Elements 11 is out. And they've both hit. Were they hit today or yesterday?
What's that? The Lightroom 4?
And Elements.
Oh, the new Elements. Elements 11
is out
this week, I believe.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, we were saying last week it was going to come out this week, but it's actually hit. So you got Lightroom 4 and Elements now from Adobe. And one thing I found quite interesting is the Mac App Store is still selling Elements 10 this morning. It's not selling 11. And I've got to say, if they turned out and they pushed 11 out, I'd drop 60 quid quite happily this morning for that. Because that gives me Elements across every computer, every Mac I've got. But they're not interested. Anyone had a play or downloaded a trial version? That'd be a no, then?
I have not, no.
No.
Oh, okay.
I did... you're talking about Elements.
Elements, yeah.
No, I've never messed with it.
Oh, Elements is good. Elements is real good. Very, very good. Well, plenty to do then, yeah. Lightroom 4 definitely came out yesterday, definitely, says Mac Jim. So he's obviously got down his copy and had a play. I'm just going to look in the Mac App Store because I think Elements was in, Lightroom was in there, wasn't it? But they haven't updated Elements, that's a certainty. I've been there and had a look this morning. Mm-hmm. No. There's nothing in for Lightroom. So there we go. If you want to go and play, they're definitely out there now. We said they were coming last week, but they're definitely here. And by all, I mean, I personally think that if you're an amateur photography, Elements is more than enough for everything that you need. It's got content-aware delete as well in this one, so you're going to be absolutely flabbergasted. Came out just in time for the new D600. Yes, Jim, but you've missed the conversation that your RAW files don't work with it. Bad luck, mate. You're going to have to wait for that one. Right then, what should we do next? iFi have released a 16 gig version of their Wi-Fi card. Now, I've got the 8 gig version of this, and this is the same price, but double the space. So you've got £99, I don't know, is it $120 or something like that in the US? And you've got double the space and the standard Wi-Fi stuff across. I've got to say, the story I was going to say in my head here was when anyone uses these, do they actually use it for the Wi-Fi? Or have they just bought themselves a really big 16 gig card now? Because I've got an 8 gig and I never use it for Wi-Fi. It's in the box and it just comes out when I need another card. Oh, bless you, Chris.
I've never used it, the Wi-Fi.
Excuse me. Oh, I use it.
You do? So
I use it all the time with this. So I got this little Olympus pen camera that I use a lot for doing when I'm writing up my posts on ours.
Yeah.
And it's just super convenient to be able to just snap, 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 and then like a minute later all the pictures are downloaded into a little folder automatically.
Yeah. See, I don't do that kind of stuff, so.
I've used it before for doing live blogs because you can't tether. Olympus cameras don't do tethering.
So, yeah, I mean, that's where it would really work for me. But I mean, for you, rather. But for me, I've got to say, I mean, I'm traipsing around some place. I haven't got my laptop with me. It's not set up in a studio next to me, and it wouldn't be direct linking. I'm out on site, and there's no way I'm going to have my laptop open dealing with it. So, but yeah. I think there's a lot of people buy them and don't use them for it.
There's a couple of the things that you can do with it. I mean, the one nice thing is once you bring it home and it connects to your home network, the pictures automatically download again, so you don't have to dig out the cable and plug it in or pull out the card and put it in the card reader or anything like that. And I think, as professionals, we kind of have a different kind of workflow than what the typical consumer does. And I think for the average consumer, that I think they find that convenience, valuable. The other side of it is that they usually have these configurations where if you're on a Wi-Fi network, it'll automatically upload pictures to places like Flickr or what's the Google thing they have? Picasa,
yeah.
Yeah. So you can set it up to upload to some of the, I think even Facebook, it'll post pictures of Facebook automatically, as long as you're in a Wi-Fi network. So, for professionals, it's probably not always that convenient. But I think for the average consumer, there's some convenience there that's really, you know, probably worth it to them.
Absolutely.
I would like to, Chris, with this card, you can just send it straight to your laptop. Is that right? Or is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have mine set up. There's a little utility you put on your computer, and it just sits there basically listening for an iFi card. And so when I turn on the camera and shoot a picture, the iFi card activates, and this little utility just sits in the background waiting to just suck up the pictures from it.
It would be ideal for you in the studio, Kev, definitely.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. You know, in the studio, I can see a benefit, especially with certain sessions. When I do an executive portrait, for instance, when I do a family portrait, they come back another day to view their images. When I do an executive, they view them immediately following the session.
Yeah.
And I would like to be able to shoot and have it go straight to the camera or straight to the computer so that they can, they're already downloaded, in other words, but they can go through the monitor and view their images and make their selection and then get out the door like they want to do. And this would be nice. It's not something I'd ever considered, but certainly looks useful.
There is a word of warning with that. And the only word of warning is the fact that your firmware has got to be probably right up to date. If you've got an older camera that's not got up to date firmware, it will struggle. And with the D600, I don't know what the situation is on drivers and that kind of stuff for that to work with it. It may be a month before that kind of goes into full swing with it. But once I'd updated my firmware on my Canon, it was effortless. And it was sending full raw images down over the pipe. They were taking a couple of minutes, sure. But, you know, if I shut off 20 images, 5 minutes later, they'd all be down in the directory ready to go. Definitely.
See, that was something that really shocked me. And it's probably because I'm one of those photographers who doesn't buy the latest, greatest camera the day it comes out. I usually wait 6 months to a year. And by then, all the software is ready for it.
Yeah.
And I was totally unaware that this is a pretty common practice that software has to catch up with the camera. And when the camera comes out, if it's got technology that Lightroom or Adobe isn't quite prepared for, it's going to be a month or two before they're absolutely ready to download an update update out there. And I was just flabbergasted. I was in a chat room with Adobe, and they told me, no, CS6 will not view the D600 images, but the latest version of Lightroom 4 will. So I immediately upgraded to Lightroom 4. Well, that still didn't work. Mm-hmm. And it was the next morning that 4.2 came out, and I upgraded that, updated it, and then I read it. But apparently that's pretty common. I was just unaware of it.
Yeah, I wanted to say, I said earlier on about 4.2 not being updated for the D600. It is updated for the D600 RAW file. My apologies. My mistake. Pentax. We talked about this camera a long time ago.
Pentax.
The Pentax 645D, absolutely luscious, available in a cherry red mottled walnut effect, and it's dropped in price. You can now buy this thing for £7,000, so this is a $10,000 camera, when before it was a £10,000 camera come $15,000 camera. This is a huge price drop. Is this just the market slowing, or?
I think they're trying to unload inventory.
Really?
Well, it's a possibility, you know, because keep in mind that Ricoh just bought Pentax from Hoya and took them over, and maybe, you know, the management at Ricoh is like, maybe this isn't, you know, where we want to be. But at the same time, you know, the 645D is a great camera. The sensor technology isn't the most amazing, but it's really good for the money.
Yeah.
And then you've got, you know, then you've got these new Hasselblads, like we were talking about, the new Mamiyas that were recently released at Photokina that, you know, kind of put some pressure on, you know, that on that value proposition, you know, coming out at similar resolutions for not much more money. So I think part of what Pentax is doing here is, you know, realizing some benefit of scale and age on the components, and you know, pushing the price down. And I also think there's some pressure, you know, on the price just from newer medium format cameras that were recently released or are about to be released. And they just want to, you know, they want to, I have no doubt here that Pentax is just they're positioning the 645D as like, you know, the budget medium format camera that works great, but, you know, doesn't cost an arm and a leg.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, it's only an arm and not an arm and a leg.
The question that I get in my mind with this is why the media format cameras are still so far away. I know Hasselblad's just kind of Hasselblad and they'll always keep the price up, but, you know, the Pentax element, good quality and all that kind of stuff, but you would have thought they'd be pushing a lot closer back towards the SLR market and putting pressure on the SLR market to try and steal a bit of business, but they still maintain this idea of being way, 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 even out of pros like us, the reach. I mean, at £7,000 for a medium format, I'd be tempted, but the lenses again are going to hit me here. But I mean, I would jump ship at sort of £7,000 perhaps, but not for a camera that I was worrying was about to become obsolete.
Mm-hmm.
They've still got it listed over here, like at B&H for about $8,800.
Which is, well, that takes it a lot lower than £7,000. That's down to a £5,000 mark if I want to go and buy it with a US warranty.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I don't think it's an issue that the camera's not going to be supported or it's not. I think we all have this mentality that, you know, like as soon as something new comes out that replaces what we have this mentality that like, oh, the stuff we have now is crap. But it's just like you were saying before, yeah. You can get the original Canon Rebel was a 300D, and it's still a very competent camera. And I think that's the issue with the Pentax is they're probably not in any position to come out with some replacement with a better sensor. So they're better off dropping the price and making it attractive to a wider audience. Because, you know, the 645D has a great lens system, and Pentax actually makes some really good pro-level flashes and things like that. So if you've already got that equipment, you know, if you're still sitting on a film system and you're thinking, oh, maybe I'd get a digital upgrade, but it's too much. Maybe this would, you know, push this price drop would push you over the edge. And I think that's where Pentax Mind is at with this right now.
Cool. While we're talking about B&H, they seem to have done something rather interesting. Lo and behold, the EOS 3D digital camera appeared. Body only, 46 megapixel CMOS sensor, and a 3.2-inch LCD screen on the back. Loads and loads of other stuff. Dual CF card, which was interesting. Standard EF lens. Full frame, I would guess, at that kind of level. No price, unfortunately, so we haven't got a clue on that. And that's magically disappeared now.
Mm-hmm.
There's a surprise. I mean, is this something that... Is this? I mean, what? Are we talking photo Kina? This will be out, or when we get it?
Wasn't photo Kina last weekend? Or is it coming up? I can't remember.
I think it's coming.
Coming up.
It's coming up. Yeah.
Is it?
It's next couple of weeks. I'll have a look now while you talk us through. I mean,
okay. But here's what I think is I'm not at all surprised that Canon is looking to do another high end camera. I think what I find most surprising is that that they're positioning as a 3D here, which what looks like to be, you know, something like a higher end 1D series camera. So it's really hard to say, you know, it's not at all unusual for some of these companies to kind of come out with a camera that you don't expect or doesn't quite fit in with the, you know, positioning of the, you know, pro and amateur and et cetera. But I just find it a little odd because I remember when the 3D, the film 3D came out years ago when it was sort of positioned between the Elan and the EOS 1, they had that EOS 3 camera. And it was more like the EOS 3 was more like what the 5D is now. It was, you know, it was still like a kind of a pro level body, had a lot of pro level features, but it didn't have the integrated grip, didn't have the, you know, the super fastest autofocus, didn't have the super fastest everything, and so I just wonder, like, you know, where exactly is Canon trying to position this camera? I mean, if it costs more than the 1DX, why is it a 3D now, which would suggest, you know, based on Canon's nomenclature, a lower end camera. You know, 46 megapixels is a mind blowing amount, and it, you know, it sort of seems to even go after the D800 mm-hmm. from Nikon as far as pushing the pixel counts. You know, so I honestly wonder, is it a full frame sensor? Is it maybe an APS, you know, style? It's sort of you know, you get more megapixels, but some of the other features are kind of a step down from the 1DX. It's, you know, obviously it's going to be hard to say until we can see actual hardware. But I just find the whole concept and the whole idea just slightly curious. It doesn't at all surprise me that Canon's thinking about something.
Oh, no, I think it's a real camera and it's really coming and it's not a million miles away. It's definitely not for Photo Kina because that's 12 months away. Yeah, it's already been and gone. My finger on the pulse, eh? The only thing that made me think was if you look at the advertisement that was allegedly posted there on B&H, there's no emphasis there on video, because if you're going to bring out the 3D and you're going to pitch it at the video SLR market and try and hit, you're going to take away from the 5D market potentially a little bit. But
well,
I would have thought you'd be introducing 60 frames a second here at 1080, which, but there's no inference at all there that video is being catered for. This is a stills.
Yeah, and. You know, Canon's just released that whole series of C-series cameras that they have that are really kind of going towards the, you know, that are more geared towards video markets, you know, the high-end video market and the low-end cinema market. Yeah. So, again, it's just, I'm just trying to kind of imagine, like, okay, who's sitting there with a 1DX thinking, well, I kind of like this, but I wish it was 46 megapixels. Maybe that's the market they're trying to go after. But if that were the case, I'd expect it to be a 1D series with some kind of other, you know, 1DV, or I don't know what they would call it. But I wouldn't imagine they'd pick that 3D that generally is, you know, indicates like this is a lower end camera from our top end 1 series. So I'm just trying to wonder like what it is that they're trying to do with it.
I think this mistake of, you know, it's showing up on B&H's website temporarily could have very well have been an intentional leak just to cut the buzz off of Nikon. Think about it. Nikon's come out with two big cameras recently, and Canon has to do something to stop the bleed. Otherwise, people are going to invest in Nikon, jump ship to Nikon, and they got to stop that. So all they do is throw something up. They probably worked it out with B&H and said, you know, we'll give you first crack. Because where else would they get a picture like this? Where else would they get this kind of information? They have to have something for them to put on their website. So Canon must have supplied something and very well could have said, put it up, leave it there for a day or two, take it down. Just to start the buzz back.
It's a conspiracy. It's a conspiracy, I tell you.
This is like Apple-level PR move.
Yeah.
Exactly.
For certain,
exactly. You know. That's what I see.
Now, one of the things.
Well, I think the other possibility is that B&H did get some advanced information. They put it into their ordering system, and someone just clicked the wrong checkbox, and it went on the website instead of, you know, just saved into a database or whatever. I mean, that's entirely possible, too.
Kodak has discontinued the T-Max P3200 film.
Sons of.
This is. This is ISO 3200 film, and the last time I shot with Kodak film that was ISO 3200, it was black and white, same thing, and it was, but it was transparency, it wasn't negative, and it was about 18 years ago, and it was the grainiest piece of crap I've ever seen in my life. I mean, it was, you want a bit more grainy for black and white for the mood and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, I'll give you that, but this was just, I mean, it was kind of like photocopy grain.
It was, I used to push this film.
It was crap. I used to push it. 64.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's. I mean, when you're shooting it at 3200, you're pushing it anyway. That's what that P3200 means. I think the emulsion itself maybe is 800, 1600. I can't remember. There's a whole huge data sheet that comes with it when you buy this film. But yeah, I used to push it to like 6400, even 12,800. I would shoot it in a little Olympus Stylus Epic.
It was the
2.8 lens.
I don't think I was using the T-Max. I think because I'm going back 18 years. Like I said, I haven't shot with film for a long time now. But it was pointless at the grain that it was supposed to be at, let alone if you start pushing it.
I loved it. Yeah, you're right. It was grainy as hell. No question.
I did it, but I used it at weddings. I had a Canon EOS 1N. And
you used it when you were getting paid for it.
Yeah, and I was getting paid for it. But I would shoot. Of course, I had my Bronica system to do all my color work, but I always used the 35, my Canon, for black and white stuff. And it was nice to be able to try and shoot at a high speed like this and then push processing. I had my own dark room. I did all my own black and white work. I never processed color, but I actually promoted it as a positive. It was an artsy look. You know, it's much like they do these days with these, you know, pea yellow skies and grungy filters, you know, calling it art. No, that's just a bunch of actions covering up bad photography. And then we were doing the same thing with this black and white film. But I did the same thing Chris did. I'd push it to, 12,000 at times. And it would be very, very grainy. But the brides loved it. It was different.
There we go. Got a show title. The brides loved it.
The photographers didn't care for it. The brides loved it. Now, that's who's paying the bills, so that's who you please.
Sax has put in the chat room, that's me crossing off Kevin from my list. My list of possible wedding photographers.
I haven't shot a wedding. I've shot one wedding in the last 5 years. I quit shooting. I did 800, and I quit shooting them about 5 years ago. And it's not that I didn't enjoy shooting them. The post-production.
Oh, yeah.
It was a beast of burden on post-production, digital versus film days.
No, I mean, I'll still shoot them, but I've done three this year. But I've done them for friends. And it's kind of like, well, oh, God, why would you do them for friends? Because you're going to fall out. And I said, no. Every time the brides come in, I said, right, what do you want? Do you want the whole portfolio finished article, or do you just want some casual shots, bit of fly on the wall type stuff, and then I'll give you the images and you do what you want with them? And the ones that say I want a book, I say, we'll get someone else. Because I'll never keep you happy. If you just want some fly on the wall stuff, you'll love them.
Creating those books now, it's not like it used to be, 1 8x10, 2 5x7s, 4 4x5s on a page. It's magazine spreads with a dozen images and low opacity and edgy borders and grunge filters. And I mean, it's absolutely chaos. It takes hours and hours. It'll take maybe an hour per 2 page spread or per 4 page spread to do an album, and I just don't have that kind of time to invest in an album anymore. You got to charge way too much. I did pretty good with my wedding averages, but it still dominated a lot of the time that I wanted to devote towards the other things I like to do in the studio.
Yeah.
Right.
Having said that, says Sax, my wife might be quite annoyed if I got married, so I wouldn't use... got married again, so I wouldn't lose too much sleep, Kev. There we go. I forgot who this is Nikon, I think, have put out a patent for a ring flash. The idea is to have a compact camera that has a ring flash built into it. I thought that was pretty damn good. It is Nikon, yes. Ring flash to mount on the camera body, and it'd be perfect for the mirrorless system, unquote. There's another picture of it there, which looks rather good. And basically, your little zooms in and out has got a little set of steps around it. How simple's that?
Is this just a piece of plastic that the flash is shooting into? Is that what it is?
Yeah. Because all of the compact cameras, the Canon system's got it as well. They've got this little thing that you undo, but you can't fit any lenses on it. It's just for little attachments like hoods and that kind of thing that they sell extra. And what they're talking about is zipping this thing on, and it just covers your flash and then gives you a ring output. I think it's a cracking idea.
Yeah, it is. It's because it won't cost them 8 cents to build this thing.
No.
But, it's a pretty, pretty clever idea. Now, you know, ring flashes in studios are awesome because they're a little bigger and move around, and you know, you on a point and shoot, you get red eye just from having a flash that close to the lens. Now you put it around the lens. I'm not sure how that's going to react on a point and shoot, but it is a clever idea, and you know, very marketable.
I'm looking desperately around in the office because I'm trying to find. I bought one of those ring flash attachments that you put onto your gun. And you just put it on, zip tie it up, and that's it. It comes down over the top of your lens, and you've got a nice little ring flash. And it looks gorgeous, and the light looks great when you actually shoot with it. But when you look at the images, they're badly underexposed. Crap. Don't buy one. I think they're available at Photo Jojo. Huge waste of money. I've seen ring flash snouts on eBay for hot shoe flashes on DSLRs. Yes, but they're all crap, mate. Don't buy them, says Bookery.
I was going to say the Pentax, their waterproof little camera has LEDs built in around the lens. So when you do close-up macro shots, you can just punch on these LEDs and light up your stuff. It's not quite like a ring flash, but...
Just diffuse your flash and then fix the red eye afterwards, stuff it.
Yeah.
Be a lazy git. Why not? Anything else worth talking about? No?
Nah,
that'll do. Good enough. Questions? We've only got one question this week because the chat room's really not bothered. We've asked them if they wanted another question, but we've got one. If you've got a question for us, send it to us at britishtechnetwork@gmail.com and we'll read it out and answer it as best we possibly can. We've had a review this week as well. Thank you, Matt. He's put down on the video podcast, a great show for camera users who don't take themselves too seriously. That's us.
That is resounding praise, yeah, frankly.
But still want all the latest news, infos and rumours while learning the odd new trick. Always a great panel and great chat room interaction throughout the show. If you get to listen during the recording, it's better. I definitely recommend this podcast to everyone. Start listening now. You won't regret it. Thanks, Matt. Do appreciate that. If you've got a review as well, please stick it in iTunes, in your relevant country and iTunes store. And it makes a huge difference on rankings. We just go just with one review. So please, please, please give us a review. Doesn't matter what it is. We'll listen to it and we'll read it out as well. We're not going to just ignore it if it's a bad one and boost it if it's a good one. Question then. Hello, chaps. I've got a comment on the show from last week. Re your app discussions on possible Photoshop-like touching. Don't forget, Pro Camera is also pretty good. It allows you to set the white balance and focus separately using a target circle. And there's an expert mode with a histogram and ISO shutter info on the screen. It's got some limited grading functions as well. It's not quite as good as Camera Plus, but it's there. Pro Camera. Any comments? Have you used that one? I haven't.
I want to look into it for sure. I've been thinking of this like UI that Apple could adopt, and if the camera app had an expert mode, just you could flick a switch or go in the settings and turn on this expert mode, and then you'd have this different UI, or you could
645 Pro does that, and it's good.
Does it?
It's real good.
I want to try it out. I've been thinking about this for a while, and I really feel like I've said my piece about the iPhone camera, and I think it's great, but I do feel like there are definitely a lot of pro shooters or advanced amateurs that use it for snapshots a lot and just get into tricky situations and like, I wish I could just flick this switch and do this, and I wish I could just do that, and I know it would be better.
No, I'd recommend 645 Pro then, because it is very good.
I'll give it a shot. Mm.
But there we go. We'll give Pro Camera a shot as well, see what that's like. I'll have a play before next week. Right. His question, however, is Johnny Rotten once said that when he started getting paid to make music, he stopped doing it for the reasons that he started. Have any of the panel found that being a professional photographer has dulled their love of photography? And does anyone take fewer photos for fun since they went pro? Go on, Kev, start us off.
Well, it's funny. I think I went through periods like that. I've always had a camera in my hand, but when I went pro, I got more excited about it because suddenly I was forced to learn things that I had just blown off as an amateur. So I got more serious about my photography. But then there was a period there, because I've been doing this a long time, that I would not. If you saw me with a camera in my hand, chances are I was getting paid to do it. I wasn't shooting for fun anymore. Because it costs money to push the button in the film days. When world went digital, the fun came back, and I started carrying a camera a little more often. Now I'm at the point where every time I get a new toy, I've got that camera in my hand all the time. I'll be carrying the 600 for the next couple of months, even when I'm not being paid to carry it. And it's because I want to experiment. I want to learn all the features in the camera. I want to know it, everything it can do. I want to flex the muscle on this camera and make it work for me in the studio. But I have to learn those things outside the studio. So, yeah, I go on walkabouts and carry my camera Sunday morning. I might just walk around the block, or I might get in the car or drive downtown and catch the homeless sleeping on the benches downtown, you know, early Sunday morning. And it's I still have that passion for photography, but I understand exactly what Johnny Rotten's talking about. I think John Lennon said the same thing, that their music changed after Hamburg, when they suddenly became discovered as the Beatles and made it big. Their music was never the same, and it wasn't nearly as fun as it was when they were playing in the Cavern Club and things like that. So I understand exactly what they're talking about.
Chris, any thoughts?
excuse me. I think I understand this totally, because I'll tell you, when I was first trying to do photography professionally, I did several weddings, and it immediately killed my desire to do a lot of professional photography, because I guess what I envisioned is that people would hire me to, you know, they would see my portfolio. They'd see, this is the work you do. We want to hire you to use your creative vision and do your best work. And what ultimately a lot of clients wanted was, they wanted a paid monkey to push the buttons, because they didn't know what buttons to push.
Mm.
And they simply wanted, you know, you would take a great picture, and they're like, no, I really want it like this, or I really want it like that, or shoot everything totally different than the way you would do it. And at which point I would just think, why wouldn't you just hire a different photographer? Because that's not, I don't do that, you know, so there's probably other photographers that do. That's not what I do. So I became very, very selective in the people I would work with, and I didn't make a lot of money on it, but I didn't care, because what I really wanted to do was, you know, to really use my creative abilities and my creative, you know, style and my eye, and use that to my best ability for someone who appreciated that. So, I feel like that's a large reason why I never really became like a full-time professional photographer, because it just didn't, you know, I just didn't want to be somebody's paid monkey.
Yeah, I mean,
I get that.
The one thing that there was a guy called Hector Lang, who was chairman of United Biscuits for years, and he always said that, you know, the greatest mistake managers can make is not to say well done. And that's because that praise kind of drives you forward and makes you want to do more. And I, in the market that I'm in, I do nothing but commercial photography. I shoot the odd wedding here and there, and I love it when the bride says, wow, those photos were great, just what we wanted. And that spurs me on. Then I'm like, oh, I could do a bit more. But I know if I was doing it and getting paid for it and someone wasn't happy, I'd get deflated pretty quickly. And I'm probably in the commercial market because I don't have that problem. I don't have to interact with people so much. And what I shoot is absolutely, you know, pretty much shite. It's nuts and bolts. It's machines. It's conveyors. It's you know, airplanes is nice and sexy and fun and that kind of stuff if you ever get them. But they're few and far between. A train here or there is nice, but generally speaking, people just pay you and take it, and that's the end of it. And I get the day and I do it, and that's my thing. I don't get a lot of praise for it. So it's difficult to come home and pick a camera up, and usually as well, everything's packed away in a bag. It comes in the office and it goes on the floor, and it can just stay there till Monday morning when I've got to pick it back up again and take it out with me. Occasionally, I'll find myself sat down on a Friday or a Saturday when the kids are out playing in the garden in the summer, and I'll think, they're not going to know I'm here, so I'll go and get a long lens and I'll sit down in the lounge and I'll shoot out of the door and start making a little video or something like that. And I'll make a video over the weekend and it'll go in the little file that says, you know, family videos. And I love doing that, but there's a certain element. The last thing I want to do when I get in on a Friday night is see a camera until Monday morning. I don't think I've lost the passion of taking photographs. When I'm out, people see me taking photographs and they know I'm good at it and they know I like doing it. But I don't want to do it when I don't have to do it. Which is sad. It's a terribly sad thing. That sounds real. The tone has gone down there, hasn't it? What a shit question that was. I, was happy until you said that in, Andy. Bastard. Thanks for the question. Great question. It was a great question. I'm just kidding. We've had a question too from the chat room. What do you guys think of novices who get into DSLR and then think they can charge for pro work straight off the bat?
Well, I mean, if someone wants to pay them, then good for them. Yeah. You know?
I agree. I mean, I think for me, it's a self-regulating market.
Yeah.
I've never had a problem with it. I realized 10 years ago that this wasn't going to be some, you know, the weddings and the portraits and all that kind of stuff wasn't going to be an issue in 10 years' time for me because I just couldn't be doing them. If you want to get a camera and you want to take a better picture than me, that's fine. If you want to charge less than me, that's fine.
Well, yeah. I don't have a problem if they want to get a camera and start charging for their work. I have a problem if they get a camera, call themselves a pro, and don't charge for their work. The problem is that with everybody flooding the market with a camera these days and calling themselves a professional with nothing more than a fan page on Facebook and then giving it all away for free to build their portfolio, they've dumbed down the public's perception of the value of a professional photograph and makes it more difficult for professionals who do charge for their work to actually make a living. Mm-hmm. There's very, very few good professionals that are making a full-time living in photography these days. So many of them have a side income or a spouse who pays the bills. And, you know, I've lived 100% of my income from the sale of my photographs for 27 years, but it's getting harder and harder to continue that.
Mm-hmm. Well, my cousin has a good camera, and they can just take my wedding pictures for free.
Yeah, and that's what you come across. You know, we have to overcome those objections, and you try to do it with quality and good customer service, and that's usually going to win out with a percentage of the population. But sometimes I lose a lot of business to the good enough mentality, and they're going to take the guy who's good enough and doing a $2 Groupon down the street, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of videographers out there that hate me just as much, and I think that's the key part is now that you've got video with DSLR and you've got all your lenses and you can create as many dynamic effects as you want with your lenses, I'm probably videographer's nightmare because I'm a pro stills photographer who's now suddenly gravitated into the corporate video market. And I think that the model that I've got in my head is I understand the visual aspect. I know how to take good images. I know how to create an impact through the way I set the camera up and the view through the lens. And just because that's a photo or video thing anymore, you can't tell me I can't do that because I know I can do that and I can make it look great. And then where I undercut them is the fact that I don't want to sit down and do a treatment. I don't want to sit down and map out a storyboard that takes 2 days of time and then be... You know, I've got four other people around me holding lights and moving things around and a sound guy and all that kind of thing that they want to do. I do the whole thing by myself. We sit down with the customer in the morning. They go through what they want. We map out a little storyboard. I can shoot them a 3-minute video in 2 days and other places can't. And that's where stills photographers have fallen down because they had guys holding the boards. They had guys holding reflectors. They had guys moving the lights. They had models to pay for and all that kind of stuff. People don't want that anymore. You've got to move with the times, and that's the key part of it. That's where I'm a videographer's nightmare in the same kind of the question. So. Good questions. Yeah. Like those.
I would be all in favor of price fixing if it were legal. You know, everybody had to charge the same thing, then the choice between photographers would be based on quality of the work, not the price. So I'm all for novices getting DSLRs and charging for their work if they charge the same thing I do. That'd be great.
I would just say, you know, like a good friend of mine, he runs a studio and he does a lot of weddings. I mean, the weddings are bringing the bulk of his money. And one of the things that he talks about with clients who are, you know, I mean, he basically starts at like $3,200. If you want to hire him to do a wedding, starting price is $3,200. It can go up from there, but it's not going down at all, period. And one of the, you know, when people come in and they complain about, oh, we love your work, but, you know, the price is too much. One of the things that he says is, you know, how much are you paying for your cake? Okay, how much are you paying for catering? Okay, how much are you paying for the DJ? And it's, you know, it's all like thousands and thousands of dollars. And it's like, okay, which one of those are you going to have 5 years, 10 years, 20 years from now? None of them.
Yeah,
DJ disappears and that's gone. But, yeah. You know, the photography that he does and the albums that he makes and stuff, those are things that you'll have to, you know, forever. you know, a memory that you can have forever.
You have three things that are geared for the rest of your life. Everything else is geared for the day of. Those three things would be the rings, the spouse, and your photographs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Spouse might not even last that long.
But right?
And the photographs.
If it all goes to plan, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
The spouse not master. See, they're angry men. They knew that the anger would come out in the end. I'm okay with it. You go ahead, shoot a picture, charge for it, see if you can get paid again. Chat room's gone off on paid monkeys. Your comment, Chris. And Vukery says, if they work for bananas, does that count?
B-A-N-A-N-A-S.
Banana. This podcast and all the others is brought to you by UK2.net. Bloody hell, they're brilliant. We love them. We've got another 2 years of them supporting us, taking all our bandwidth and us saying thank you. You guys as well, they want to say thank you to you because you've been buying absolutely shed loads of UK2 services. It seems that every listener that listens to any of our podcasts, if they want a web domain, they go to there first and find out, lo and behold, it's actually cheaper. For £10, you can get a .com and a .co.uk for 2 years with a 20% off that we give you. No one gives you 20%. 20%, that's a huge amount. If you would like anything to do with the web, domains, VPS, VPN, co-location services, dedicated servers, anything like that, go and see UK2.net. Go to our website first, BritishTechNetwork.com, use the click-through, which is their logo, and then put in the offer codes, which are on our sponsors page, and you'll net yourself an absolute jaffer of a bargain. UK2.net, we couldn't do this without them. You should support them because they support British Tech. Cheers. Right then, last thing. Where can we get a hold of you, Monsieur Fosman?
You can always catch me on Ars Technica at arstechnica.com. And if you want to banter about on Twitter, at Forsmack.
Excellent, sir. And Mr. Newsom, where are you?
Newsomsstudio.com is the website, or Twitter at Newsomsstudio.
And if you're in the Tampa area, and you want a picture, don't be seeing anyone else. See Kev.
Yes, if you want it done right, you call me.
Good man. And if you're in Chicago, wait a couple of weeks and Kev will come and take your picture drunk.
I'd be happy to go there and just steal some.
Because he'll have been out.
I'll take Forsman. Your picture drunk right now. You don't even have to wait.
Yeah, and he'll do it for free. Now, once he's been out with Forsman, we may not see you on this show again. What's this week's news? Kev went to Chicago. Forsman killed him with alcohol. Be careful. Go easy on him.
All right.
I wish you were coming to... You guys need to come to England. Then we'll have a drinking session.
All right.
Right. See you next week. Thanks for listening. Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.